You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina.
Well, hello listeners, it's already 2026. Can you believe it? Happy New Year, if that's not far too late to say, seeing as we are at the end of January now. And we've even already had a Women's World Tour race, can you believe? Well, we're starting this year on the Cycling Podcast Feminine with a bit of a, well, I would say a bumper edition, but it's certainly bumper in numbers of presenters anyway, because we have me, Rose Manley. Not just that, we also have Denny Gray. Say hello, Denny.
Hello, Denny. An old classic,
yeah. Just like yourself, Denny, of course. Yeah, we have Rebecca Charlton.
Hello.
And we have Joe Rousel.
Hi there.
I should also say, not only do we have that, but Joe is also joined by another presenter. I think we can even hear him right now.
Yes.
Oliver, yeah. Baby Oliver.
9-month-old baby Oliver is safely in a playpen with a variety of toys, none of which are anywhere near as interesting as anything that's dangerous. So I've kept him safely in there, just in the background. So any noise that we hear is him. He's been desperate to try and play with the headphones and the mic. That's what he really wants to get his hands on. So...
But we should say, I don't think we've even said congratulations,
oh, thank
Joe,
you.
On baby Oliver. I mean, it must have been, what a year you've had.
Yeah, so he arrived 5 weeks early, which was a bit of a shock. It was the day before, was it Gent-Wevelgem maybe? And I was due to commentate.
I do love how even the birth of your child is like measured in bike
races.
That's real commitment.
It was because I was due to commentate and I had always had a feeling that he might arrive early. But yeah, he arrived at 35 weeks and I was due to commentate that next day. So I sent an email at maybe like 3 a.m. and I just copied in anybody that I thought might possibly look at their emails in the next few hours, and I was like, we've had a surprise, baby's arrived, and then I put, for the avoidance of doubt, I will not be able to commentate tomorrow or the next foreseeable, the next 2 weekends when I was booked for or whatever it was.
A true professional,
okay,
Joe. And that means that Oliver's obviously got fantastic cycling knowledge already, so we will be hearing his opinions.
Yes,
we are going to be doing bold predictions, which is fast become a tradition, and in the way that all traditions go, everybody hates doing it but has to do it. This is a tradition based off of Denny coming up with it about an hour before the episode last year and saying, why don't we just each come up with some bold predictions that we can say about the 2025 season.
Isn't Joe the queen,
Denny,
of this?
Rebecca, you say that. Shall we start? In fact, we are actually going to come later in the programme to talk about the Tour Down Under, which has already happened, and of course the exciting news that the Grand Départ of the Tour de France Femme is going to start in the UK next year. We'll talk about that later on. But we'll start at the very top, beautifully cued in by Rebecca Charlton, who we didn't get to hear the bold predictions of last year, with our report card from how we fared last year. Joe, you said last year that Anna van der Breggen was going to win a Grand Tour, which, yes, didn't happen.
No.
She came third in the Vuelta, sixth in the Giro, 11th in the Tour de France Femme.
I mean, it started off better and got progressively worse. But, I mean, at the Vuelta, things were looking promising. I was like, yep, first Grand Tour for her back after a few
and
years
a stage
out.
Win.
Yep, it's going to go that way. Didn't quite work out. But
it didn't.
Never mind.
It petered out her Grand Tour ambition, didn't it? And Monica Trinka-Colonel, who we were all desperately Googling last year, to win a Grand Tour stage, which also didn't happen, but she did come. Her best was fourth at the Vuelta stage 4. She was up there, wasn't she? And she did win stage 6 in the Ardèche, not a World Tour or Grand Tour race. But yeah, good victory there. Beat Avita Musique by 58 seconds. And all year, whenever I saw Monica Trinka-Colonel, I always thought of you, Joe. I was like,
good, I'm glad.
She's spurred on by hearing Joe Rousel say her name. So I would say, Joe, I'm going to give you, might have to just give you a C+, I'm afraid, which is probably the lowest mark that Joe Rousel has ever received in anything.
Definitely is.
we'll take it. Thank you. At least I went bold.
Oh, she's upset.
Like, I could have played it safe, but I for trying to fit into the category of bold predictions, I feel like I ticked those boxes.
No, That is true. That is true.
Okay, she's appealed. So, does that bring her up to a C?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, almost. To be bold, you almost have to be wrong, don't you? I mean, if you play it too safe, then, you know, this. What is bold? That's the question.
Well, this is the question that we asked directly to you, Denny, who came up with this whole thing. But yes, well, I last year said Vollering to win the Vuelta and the Tour. She came first in the Vuelta, so that looked pretty good. And then second in the Tour. But it's kind of like if you come second, then you're sort of nowhere in terms of this bold prediction, aren't you? So that didn't come true. Chloe Dygert to win Paris-Roubaix. She finished eighth, which is not bad because since we didn't know she'd actually even be doing it. So I'm just glad she made the start line. And Marianne Vos came to win Milan-San Remo, and she came second. So I was just slightly off the mark. So I don't think that I think I'm probably on, there on the old C-plus as well as Joan. Some narrow losses there. Denny Gray, however. Now, you're going to enjoy this, Denny, because I never sing your praises, do I? So, Kat Ferguson to win a Women's World Tour race. She did that. She won Tour of Britain Stage 3. Vollering to win no Grand Tours. That didn't happen because she won the Vuelta. And Puck Peterson to get a Classics win. And she won Flesh Wallon. So, if anything, Denny, we've learned that you weren't bold enough there, probably.
Well... I
or
thought
your
they were...
Mystic Meg.
Hang on, that was a compliment, but then it just sort of turned at the end there.
It's like the Christmas
so you
quiz all
the brief,
over again, isn't
is
it?
What
I thought,
we're
thought
yeah.
I'd won.
It always is.
Taken away from me. No, well, I thought they were relatively bold predictions. Okay, yeah, but they were based on some kind of evidence. So,
well, I think that's hopefully they're not just totally random.
Don't worry.
Random name and race generator.
I've got some predictions that will come very wrong this time around, so.
Oh, okay. Thank goodness. And well, actually, I should say, you were getting a bit greedy, Denny, and you were throwing in a load of predictions at the end, because I just listened to it this morning. You said that I would declare Belgium a cheese country, which is totally did not happen. And I even imprinted a cheese knife that said it wasn't a cheese country. So that one went totally wrong. But I'll have to give
that,
you...
Rose. During cheese over Christmas with the kids, that they read the engraving that you put in my cheese knife that says Belgium is not a cheese country, and it opened up a whole discussion in the family, and now the kids don't think Belgium is a cheese country, which is
You're
turning my family against me. It's terrible.
Yeah, you're doing that yourself with your crazy theories, Denny. So Denny, you have to have an A. That's an A. Not an A plus, actually, because you weren't totally right. An A minus. A solid A minus for you.
Thank you very much.
Denny, but yes, well, we should get on to this year. Let's see. Well, Denny, you can maybe start us off with one of your predictions, seeing as you were the king of the predictions last year, it turns out.
Okay, well, my first prediction is going to involve a rider that is basically a domestic British rider at the moment called Noemi Thompson. She's 22 years old. She didn't begin racing until 2025. I think she won her first road race, very minor British road race. But by the end of the year, she'd gone from being a club rider to riding for Das Hutchinson, a UCI Continental team, and came second in a point pro race in Spain. She, talking to team management, she is phenomenally powerful, but obviously needs to learn her racecraft being so new to road racing. So I'm not quite sure how to pitch this, but my first suggestion off air was that she was going to win a UCI road race. But either way, I think she's going to really surprise the pro peloton in a big race next year. I think she'll.
What kind of race are we talking, Denny?
Well, it depends on the calendar that Das Hutchinson get. But, because the trouble is now UCI Continental teams can't really ride World Tour races because of the new UCI eligibility rules. But so I would say a point pro race or, you know, some fairly major professional race below World Tour level.
This does make me wonder if Denny set this up as a little promotion for the British Continental.
I didn't
mention
the
British Continental.
Because
if you want to find out if she does it...
But thanks
if you want
plug.
To find out how she does it, then you know which website to go to. You were right about your... I mean, obviously, Kat Ferguson was not an unknown as Naomi Thompson is, was she, this year. But, you know, you definitely have a great sense for the top British talent coming through. I have to say, I can't offer too much up on whether that's a bold prediction or not. I mean, certainly if a rider new to racing, that it is certainly bold to say that they're going to win anything, because the odds, I mean, with any cyclist, the odds are stacked against you. But yes, yeah, certainly, certainly one to watch once we find out what... I like how you started with a prediction that's so bold with no specifics particularly to it. But... we will look forward to seeing whatever Naomi Thompson does this year, for sure. Give us another one, Denny. Have you got one to do with, I don't know, Grand Tours or Classics or...
Okay. I'm hesitating, listeners, because I came up several before we started recording, and I'm just deciding which one to go for. I will go for Anna van der Breggen. This is Joe, repeat of Joe's prediction or bold prediction last year. Anna van der Breggen to win a world tour, to win a Grand Tour.
That is bold. And well, Joe, what would you say to that? Having said it last year, and it been actually quite far from true.
Well, I think it's even bolder to predict it this season, having seen her last year. I'm sorry, I have got some baby background noise. I hope everyone's enjoying Oliver's opinion as well. I mean, I thought it was bold last year when I predicted it, but I think it's even bolder now, because as we saw, her results sort of got worse over those first three. I say worse, I mean, it wasn't bad. I can't say I've had similar results in Grand Tours. But no, I think bold prediction, Denny. I'm not making that one myself, but I like that you've gone bold there.
Well, thanks, Joe. the reason I've said it is because clearly it is bold and unlikely to happen. But she's coming back to racing, having a year of racing in her legs, another winter of training, a year of learning, adjusting to how the peloton races now. And so I think it's possible that she'll come back a bit wiser, a bit smarter, and, you know, perhaps with more in her legs to kind of make the difference. It wasn't that she was completely nowhere in the Grand Tours. She was pretty consistent. She was solid. I think it's possible that she could make that step up to becoming a real Grand Tour contender that we didn't quite see her at last year.
I think also you can't quite judge her on her results, because I think that you could see in the races her sort of ambitions and her the leadership role in the team, or what the ambitions of the team were, kind of changing. It wasn't like that, you know, it wasn't like the results that she achieved were all in for getting the best position on GC, was it, in the end? I think she went into the Vuelta looking to win, but then saw that maybe that she didn't have that, and kind of switched her sort of allegiances, as it were. But I do think that is bold. I mean, we saw some flickers of outstanding sort of swashbuckling riding, didn't we, at the beginning of the season. But I kind of almost think that everyone was running a bit scared of her, and then kind of realised that maybe we do have the legs to overcome the great Anna van der Breggen.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Becca, do you have a grand tour, someone that you're giving a shout out for winning a grand tour?
I was well, because you've brought me in on the grand tour thing, I feel like I'm gonna really let myself down here, because this is just, I don't think now that this is bold, but I've written down Marlon Moisa for grand tour, which, yeah, in hindsight on my list isn't, that's not really that bold, is it?
Well, I don't, I mean, it's not like we're not, I mean, Marlon Moisa isn't a grand tour winner, is she?
So, well, this is, so, this, you know, is true.
She, okay, hasn't, Marlon Moisa
for grand tour.
And before last year, I mean, if you'd said that last year, it would have been really bold. But actually would have been very close to being true.
Like moderately bold. Okay,
this
I think I've got a feeling about Moisa coming into this year. I think this is a really interesting one for bold predictions this year, because as we came into last season, I know we've talked about this a lot in the last couple of episodes, but there was so much that was unknown. And I think it was so exciting for that reason. And not only with those key players that kind of came to the fore throughout the season, but seeing Magdalena Valieres win the World Championships. Like, we had so many wild cards that we couldn't have possibly thought at the beginning of the season. I feel like this one might be a little bit more measured. I'm not saying it's going to be less exciting, but I think, you know, the cards are kind of a little bit more on the table with so many players. That said, we don't know the order of them. I love Denny's of Anna van der Breggen, because I think if anyone knows how to utilise their winter and come back, it's her. And I think she was quietly chuffed with where she was at. So I think that's a really exciting one. So yeah, I'm going to go for it and say Moisa.
Yeah, I know. I think that's it's actually, in some ways, it's bold this year, because everyone is looking at Marlon Moisa now as a potential Grand Tour winner, aren't they? And they're going to be guarding against her in a way that I think last year people were a little bit surprised about her being up there in the climbs and being up there on the general classification. So I think that's a good shout. I've said, now I think I've stepped a little bit into being too bold, perhaps, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I've said Dominika Vlodacek, what a rider. I always mess that up, but it's a great line, Denny. And I'm saying that she is going to win a Grand Tour, which does seem crazy, but obviously she came, was it fifth last year at the Tour de France? Found a bit of a surprise package. I think the reason why she might win is because we've seen her be, well, we saw her be fantastic at the Tour Down Under, which has just happened, didn't we? But also because she's on the team with the likes of Mavi Garcia and Longo Borghini, she's a great foil. People won't be thinking that she's the leader. Everyone will be looking at Longo Borghini, and that might give a little, you know, we've seen UAE do some fantastic tactics, not at the Tour Down Under, it should be stressed. but last year we did see them use their numbers to a fantastic advantage, didn't they, in the Giro. So that's my... Joe, you got a feeling on Dominika Vlodacek?
I think she was fourth at the Tour last year.
Oh, not, fourth?
I say I think, I'm looking at the results on my screen right now.
All right. So.
She was about a minute off the podium. It was Kashia in third and she was fourth. So yeah, it was stunning. So I think I like that as a bold prediction, like in terms of it could happen. It could be quite unlikely as well, given her teammates, like you say, and who's going to be race leader. But I do like that you've gone in that direction. Wasn't on my list, but
I do also, I love Joe always says that. You wouldn't catch me saying it, but yeah, love you've gone for that. Yeah, love that you're writing that down and recording it on a public available podcast for yourself. No, I'm pretty. As much as I think that's bold, I also, you know, it's a possibility. It's a possibility. That's all we're looking for. Anyone got anything from the classic, perhaps?
Well, hold
Becca,
on.
Doesn't Joe
have a Grand Tour related?
Oh, sorry, Joe. Yeah. Do you have a...
But
yes,
both
sorry.
Both of mine are Grand Tour related, so I'm a bit out of the conversation after this one. But I can think of some classics ones if we want. But my first one is Sarah Gigante to win the Giro. And I say this not currently up to speed, but exactly where she's at in her training, comeback-wise, and without having fully studied the descents of the Giro. But I know there's some serious climbing there. And she was obviously close last year. and clearly very determined. So I'm going for Sarah Gigante for the pink at the Giro. It's a new place in the calendar this year, the Giro. So I'm really excited about that race in general in terms of how different people might target it, because there's now quite a significant gap before the Tour de France fam. But still, I'm going, Gigante to win is my bold prediction number one.
I did have her on my list, but then she did break her femur, I think, in August. So that then made me kind of question what kind of training she would get in the winter. But I do think, I mean, she has obviously proved so much to herself last year on the climbs, didn't she, at the Giro and the Tour. And I mean, everyone kind of banged on about the fact that she was weaker on the descents, and that kind of took her off the podium, didn't it, at the Tour de France, at the end of the Tour de France fam last year. But, you know, she knows that's her weakness. And we also know that she's been talking to psychologists and coaches about descending. So it's almost as if she can just get that one puzzle piece right, then, you know, there's no stopping her. Becca, I think you kind of were considering Sarah Gigante as well, weren't you, as a potential?
She absolutely would have been on my list for this year. And I love that you've got that down. It's like Joe says, I just hope she's in a good place. With coming back from another huge, huge setback. So let's see where she's at. But if anyone can do it, Sarah Gigante can. And I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see her, yes, again, another comeback into this season. Because, she's just brilliant. And as you say, Rose, she knows exactly what she's doing with targeting everything that I am very sure is ahead of her in her long career. Psychologists have been recruited. So have descending experts and coaches. So let's see. But I love that.
No, okay, so I was wondering also about if anyone would say that someone was going to go for the Giro Tour double. That's what I was, one of the things that I was, I think I might have even said that on the men's podcast when they asked me to send in a prediction. I might have said Vollering to win the Giro Tour. So I'm kind of almost going against my own predictions. And it's, you know, literally a few days between giving that. Joe, did you have another Grand Tour prediction?
I certainly do. And it could work out with your double that you just mentioned. Although it won't now, because Gigante to win the Giro was my prediction number one. My second bold prediction is for Elisa Longo Borghini to podium at the Tour de France fam. And that is bold because she has had a not great history in that race. I'm being careful what I say because she's obviously a fantastic rider, but she's had quite a lot of bad luck. She's had to withdraw or not finish or not start. Various things have got in her way with the Tour de France fam. So my bold prediction is that she will put all of that to bed this year and she will get on the podium. I could have gone bolder and said win, but I'm just drawing it back in slightly and going for podium because I would like to improve on my C+ for this year.
Well, we're so excited to see how she gets on. It feels like we're excited every year to see how Longo Borghini gets on at the Tour, because we kind of rarely get to see her give a good shake at it, don't we? I don't know that is that bold. I mean, if she turns up, then she's going to be fantastic. Denny, how bold are you saying that is?
I mean, if she turns up and she's in form, you'd think she would have a very good chance of getting on the podium. But as Joe said, she has had a terrible run. I mean, I wouldn't put it on my list. Let's put it that way. No. No. I think the competition for tour podium places is going to be fiercer than ever. You know, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot said she's going to try and defend her title. Damien Vollering will be so, so hungry to get that tour title this year. Then you've got, you know, riders are always in the mix. Former winner Cassie Nevia-Doma and others. So it's not a given, even if she's in good form, and that's a big if as well. So I don't know, it's fairly bold, but there's, you know, strong basis behind the prediction.
Is it bold enough to count for this prediction game?
I think we have to say that, you know, she doesn't have any history of being on the podium at the Tour historically.
I think it counts.
Oh, good. So that's all I need. That's all I need. I'm in the game.
Okay, have we got any... Becca, do you have something from the classics, maybe? A prediction for the...
I do have a specific prediction for the classics. Five for Georgie is going to win Paris-Roubaix. There you go. Said
that
it.
Is bold. No doubt about
that
it.
That is bold. We would love to see it, but you know, you say it's bold, but you know, she is a former podium finisher, isn't she, at Roubaix. I'd also say her team is going to be fully behind her. There's not going to be much in that team. There's not many, they haven't got much else going on. Should it be said? But you know, I mean she's a definitive leader there, isn't she? And so it's not like those teams like SD work. Sometimes the way they trip up is that they've got so many cards to play that they can't all be all in on one rider. But that, you know, her team will be all in for her. And we do remember, it was actually one of those highlights, wasn't it, a few years ago when she found out that she had got the photo finish, that she had ended up on the podium. That was, and tears and surprise and elation. And that was really special seeing a rider react like that in the Roubaix Velodrome. So that was a special moment. So I like it. I've gone...
We should also say we won't see Pauline Ferrand-Prevot winning this year, will we? Because she's not got it on her race programme.
No, it's funny actually, when I was listening to our predictions for last year, you know, how little Pauline Ferrand-Prevot gets mentioned, considering what a total sort of whitewash she made of the whole cycling season, to be honest. I think, credit to you again, Denny, I do think you mentioned Pauline Ferrand-Prevot at one moment, saying that she would certainly be up there.
That's so, pretty safe. But yeah, she did. I mean, she did surprise us, didn't she? I mean, we were all... In terms of comebacks, we were all talking about Anna van der Breggen, and I think we completely underestimated her collectively. So, yeah, you know, she was phenomenal, and no one will be making that mistake this year.
No, that's right. I said, for my kind of looking at the classics, I said Leanna Lippert to win the Tour of Flanders. I was toying with saying Lotte Kopecky to do a Flanders-Roubaix double. But then I was a little bit conflicted, as I thought maybe that wasn't bold enough. Although I did have my arguments why it was bold, in that, you know, no female rider has done that. Not that we've had it for many years, but and also because of Kopecky not having a great sort of end of season last year, that maybe it was a bold enough claim. But I'm going to say Leanna Lippert to win Flanders, because I think she's been on phenomenal form this year, always slightly under the radar, but has been growing in confidence and has been getting the better of rides that you wouldn't think that she would. So yeah, that's what I'm saying. Tour of Flanders to go to Leanna Lippert.
I like that. I think she's the kind of rider that, you know, you think would get a big one day result sooner rather than later, and she has been there or thereabouts in the classics, hasn't she? But never quite got that breakthrough moment. So it would be great to see her do well. And Movistar are a team kind of on the up, I think. They had a solid season last year, and I think we'll see more of them this year. So yeah, I really like that.
I do think it plays into her hands also having Marlon Royster on her team, because now it's almost like, at one point they were kind of saying that the general feeling was that Leanna Lippert would take Annemiek van Vleuten's sort of crown and would turn herself into this sort of GC rider for Movistar. And I think having Marlon Royster now as sort of the out-and-out GC candidate has kind of left Leanna Lippert with a little bit more freedom to go for the races that she wants to, and to do a little bit more in the one-day races. So that concludes, I think, unless anyone's got any quick-fire bold predictions they want to throw in at the end. You know, Denny, that was kind of your thing last year, was throwing just a load of names out towards the end just to cover all bases, but it did work out for you.
Sarah Van Dam to win her first women's world tour race. She's had a good start to the season at Tour Down Under. I think she's just been getting better and better each year, and I think with being on board with Visma Lisa bike now, she's got a team around her that can support her. So, yeah, I think she could have a big breakthrough this year.
Becca, you got a quick fire one?
I was a bit too vague with things earlier, so I'm going to be even more specific than Georgie for Roubaix. Zoe Baxted to win the TT at the Tour de France Femmes Avec Zwift in 2026.
Wow. I like that.
I really
that
want a good report card.
That is very, but I mean, that's pretty bold, isn't it? I mean, particularly.
You know, I don't like to be bold.
No. No, it was a real effort getting the forklift truck over to take you off your fence today, wasn't it? But I'm very glad that you joined us.
That will be
momentarily. I'll get back up there in a minute.
She has ridden a work grand tour once. I was wondering whether she'd actually ridden one, but yeah, she has ridden the Vuelta in 2024. But yeah, I think that is quite bold. But she's clearly super talented at time trials. So if she's on the start line, you wouldn't rule her out.
Well, we'll see. Joe, have you got a quick fire one for
us? Well, no one's going to believe me, but I've actually written down Sarah Van Dam on my piece of paper and I've put a star next to her name. So I've not got myself anywhere near off the fence in terms of what I want to predict for her, but her name. But Denny's got in there with that one, which I think is a good one. She should have a good tour down under, which obviously we'll come to later. I'm going to go Vos to win Milan San Remo.
Oh, that was my one last year. And I was heartbroken that didn't happen. Because I felt at the time it was more of a... I was saying it more with my heart than my head.
Oh, I totally am, yeah.
And then I actually, to come second, so, you know, so close like that, so I can only hope that it happens this year. But we'll see, won't we? Now that you guys know that I'm going to listen next year and write them down, I should have told you before that, because we need to nail this brief, don't we, of bold predictions. But yeah, well, we'll find out, won't we, whether we were too bold or too played it safe too much. I love how, Denny, I'm still not giving you any credit. You just played it too safe. But we shall see.
That's fine. I wouldn't expect any less.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Well, as I said at the top of the show, of course, we've already had a Women's World Tour race, haven't we? The Tour Down Under, which is what I... Not to suggest that, Denny and Joe, you were getting some of your bold prediction intel from how people were faring there, but certainly Sarah Van Dam made a really strong performance there, didn't she? Noemi Rugg was the overall winner there, of course, winning it for the second time in a row. And I think what needs to be talked about straight away is the situation on that third and final decisive stage at the Tour Down Under, where it all came down to a group of four, three of those riders being UAE riders, Paola Blasi, Mavi Garcia and Dominika Vlodicek, and Noemi Rugg of EF. Normally, when you have the numbers like that in your favour, you would say it would have to be a UAE win. Denny, what was your take on that? Was it just bad tactics from the UAE team, or was it just that Rugg had was going to always have the better sprint at the end there? How did you see that play?
I think it was a combination of both, really. It was kind of shades of Omloop Het Nieuwsblad when Ian Stannard kind of overturned a three-man Omega Pharma Quickstep team, as it was then, I think it was. I think the problems for UAE... I mean, first of all, UAE had a tremendous race and they clearly had the strength in numbers and lots of riders in excellent form, and I think that bodes well for their season. I couldn't quite get used to seeing Mavi Garcia in the UAE kit. But that's but apart from that, they had a great race. And but I think the problems for them started earlier on in that stage when Dominika Vlahovic and Sarah Van Dam and Mavi Garcia were in a three rider break, and they, I think, maybe getting frustrated with Sarah Van Dam's lack of kind of contribution to the break. Dominika Vlahovic attacked and went solo, and I think they could have chosen to try to work together to extend their lead over the chasing group at that point and maybe consolidated their advantage ahead of the final climb. But instead, what that meant was that Vlahovic was alone, had to do, you know, twice as much work as she would have, and the chasing pack caught up with Garcia and Van Dam, and that led to the situation where ultimately Vlahovic was brought back. And not only that, but she was worn out. Garcia had already worked in the break too. So while they had the numbers, they perhaps weren't as fresh and didn't have the options they might have had had they played it differently at that stage. But and again in the finale, when it all came down to the sprint against Naomi Rugg, they just didn't seem to know. Mm. And I think they kind of admitted this in the interviews afterwards. They didn't seem to know how to play it. There was no kind of coordinated effort between the three of them about how they'd approach that sprint. Naomi Rugg probably was the strongest on the day anyway, and I think she probably would have won the sprint no matter how they played it, but clearly that might have undermined their efforts. And I heard journalist Matt Deneef on another podcast describe the fact that
there aren't any other podcasts, Denny. I don't know what you're talking about. Other podcasts don't exist. What are you talking about?
Maybe
mean?
It was a dream, a fever dream that came to you.
Matt Deneef came to you in a dream.
Yeah, he'd witnessed Dominika Vlahovic at the team camper after the race, and she was in tears and having very strong words with her DS. And it was clearly felt that things had gone wrong for her and for the team on the day. And so, yeah, I don't think they didn't get it right, but I don't think we should take anything away from Naomi Rugg either, because she played it brilliantly, and she was, I think, probably the strongest in the sprint anyway.
There was also that key moment, though, wasn't there, on the climb when right towards the end. I mean, it was actually the very last bit of climbing on the very last climb when I think it was Paola Blasi went off on an attack, and Mavi Garcia brought Naomi Rugg back up. I wonder if Mavi Garcia just couldn't remember what team she was on briefly, just like in an old habit, just went after her. But, you know, that effectively brought Naomi Rugg back, and then we did see them doing all the counter-attacking on the descent, but it's just not very effective to do that. So I think that was kind of the, if you could pinpoint one moment where it just, their tactics just went totally wrong, they didn't play it right at all, it would be that. Although there was some fantastic hand throwing, wasn't there, also on the finish. Joe, what was your read of it? Obviously, you were commentating on it, watching it all in real time.
Yeah, so, I mean, exactly as Denny said, I think they got it wrong the lap before. They had a situation with two riders from UAE plus Sarah Van Dam, and Sarah Van Dam is fast in a sprint, and I understand why they were doing what they were doing in terms of attacking her, but it just all felt half a lap too early. They still had another lap with that really significant climb on. They could have just worked. I mean, she shouldn't have worked in that group of three, Sarah Van Dam, as the rider not on the same team, but they could have worked to increase that gap. Instead, you had EF behind with the world champion trying to close the gap, which obviously succeeded. And I think if they just try to put some more time gap between them and everybody else, they then could have thought about the finish next time around. But they were so keen to get rid of Sarah Van Dam, they just wore themselves out. Everything came back together. And for me, the race was lost by that point. I thought they're not going to do this now. They've got it wrong, you know, a lap too early. And I always thought Naomi Rugg was going to be the fastest sprinter of that group. I think it would have been hard for them to have won that anyway, and she had been able to sit on her teammate and with all that brought back together. So, I mean, once he got to that situation with three versus one, as you know, we do that to compare to the Ian Stannard classic of more than 10 years ago now, but I'm glad we're still referring to that because it was brilliant. I always thought she was going to get that, just given on paper she really was the fastest. And it was like a downhill sprint as well. It was really like a sort of a fast sprint. There wasn't even an opportunity with a kick to the line to try and, you know, get the jump on her. But yeah, for me, it all really went wrong a lap before. And like you said, the second time at the climb as well, that just went wrong as well. So it all, you know, we can all talk about the finish and how you can manage three versus one. But they had two opportunities before that where, in my opinion, they'd got the tactics wrong.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think that if you looked at the turn of speed of Rug at the end anyway, like she had that and she knew, like, as long as she could keep contact and be there for that final, that it did suit her. And I think, yeah, the turn of speed was just devastating and they weren't going to get near to it. But I think it is worth talking about that final, though, in the way that we've seen this before in other scenarios. I'm thinking back to an SD Works moment at the Women's Tour of Britain where they were still talking and looking at each other, and then Ruby Rose Van Gannon just came through and pitched to the post, which obviously a different scenario. But I think that when you psychologically know you've got the strength in numbers, I sometimes think it is easier to get it wrong because you're kind of like, actually, who's taking this? What are we doing? And you can't always have the time to have that communication. So yeah, I completely agree. The mistakes were made earlier on, but I think also coming into that final, they were still looking at each other as teammates and just didn't know how they were playing it. And Ruud just went.
And it's also a problem, isn't it, when they're three quite... There's not an established leader out of those three of Paola Blassi and Mavi Garcia and Dominika Vlodicek. They're all like really top climbers, but there's not a clear leadership. Or, well, you know, Mavi is the leader and we all work for that. And I think we saw that that was also a problem, wasn't it, on the previous laps where, you know, you see Dominika Vlodicek doing a lot of the work on the front and like you're like, well, if you're the protected rider, then you're just burning all of your energy now instead of letting Mavi do the kind of chase back or, you know, bringing what was an early breakaway back. So there wasn't an established leader, was there? And I guess that's one of those things that happens in the first race of the season, doesn't it, Becca, that people are getting used to new teams and new tactics and, you know, even teammates don't necessarily understand each other very well. Yeah, that's kind of a symptom of this race, is that it kind of does throw up some kind of oddities.
Completely. And I think, once again, we expect everybody to have it all figured out and think, well, they've done all their training camps together, they've done all their glossy photo shoots, so they've had this time to really gel and know exactly what they're doing. But it is the first opening race of the season and mistakes can sort of happen, because I think that riders often say, you know, we have had limited time in this off season to learn our new dynamic. And I'm sure, yeah, they're going to take so much away from that race as to where they go from there. But yeah, I think it goes back to that talking point on riders being human. And sometimes we're just like, well, why didn't they have that figured out by January? But yeah, they'll learn from it.
But yeah, I mean, and that's not to take anything away from Noemi Rugg's win. And it did get mentioned also, you know, seeing Magdalena Valieras as well in the World Championships jersey right at the forefront of the race and doing a lot of work for Noemi Rugg was great to see. Bit of a thrill to see her in her rainbow stripes for this kind of very special season for her. I mean, we haven't even mentioned actually the winner of the first two stages was Ali Wollaston of FGJ, which was a fantastic result for her. I mean, we know how strong she is, but I think it was also really remarkable for FDJ as a team, because we know that last year they kind of have said that they're a hugely ambitious team. You know, they want to win Grand Tours, and obviously we saw a whole shake-up last year and they brought in Demi Vollering, was kind of the big name signing. But, you know, they haven't shown themselves to be like SD Works, have they, in terms of they're not just going out and winning every single race. So I think to start the kickoff of the season with two wins in, you know, fast finishes in sprint settings is a really positive for one for them. Denny, what was your sort of take on Ali Wollaston's wins there?
Yeah, no, great start for the team. And you know, Ali Wollaston's shown before she often goes well in the Australian summer, those early season races. You know, she targets them because you know, they're at her end of the world, and she was, you know, by far the strongest sprinter there, wasn't she? I mean, the distance she won stage one on was you know, very, very comfortable. She showed she can win those kind of races where the terrain is quite tough. You know, there's still quite a lot of climbing in those first two stages. And she won the Tour of Britain, I guess, in maybe similar circumstances or stages and stages there as well. So I think she's a really adaptable rider, and a great start for the team. Joe mentioned off air that Lauren Dixon, one of the team's new signings, also had an excellent race. She's a 25-year-old Scot, a bit like Noemi Thompson, who I mentioned earlier. She was very new to racing, only had her first full season of racing last year, and had a few breakthrough results, including a podium at the Tour of Norway, running Sarah Gigante and Justine Herrera very close in the climb, and really outstanding talent, but has a lot of racecraft to learn. But she rode a very accomplished race, finished 17th overall, you know, rode as a very strong teammate. She'll be really happy with that kind of debut at World Tour level, having only ridden UCI Continental level last year. I mean, she only had a Category 4 license, which is the lowest kind of license you get as a racer in the UK, in 2024. So she's, you know, huge kind of leap up for her. But she's a rider that, I mean, I did interview her last year, so I won't plug which site I've interviewed her for. But she has a real growth mindset, and descending is something that she had really struggled with, but she's actually has a descending coach. And we saw in the final stage, she did a really great job of descending with the chasing group, to kind of hold her position. So it's kind of something she's working on and she's improving on. And I think, although she's got a lot of other strong riders in that team, she could be someone who gets a result for herself this year as well.
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? I mean, at the Tour Down Under, you do get to see a little bit the inner workings of all the teams, but it was a bit different this year because of having the change in the UCI regulations, where we had all of the Women's World Tour teams. Now, Joe, as you know, as the commentator, you kind of watched it from flag drop to the finish. Not to say that I didn't do that at whatever time it was in the morning. How do you think that kind of changed how the whole race was raced?
We are on our last crisp for the baby, so you might have an opinion as well. We were on air from 12:30 till 5 a.m, and I'm sure you were with us, Rose. Was...
Just when I came back from the club, basically.
perfect timing. what was interesting for me is usually, I mean, back on as well as a commentator, you're often looking at the sort of teams that are going to go for the breakaways. And it's always the smaller teams that really want to get them representation in a breakaway. And they want to get their jerseys on screen, their spotters on screen. And often when you look at some of the early, but I mean, women's cycling doesn't follow the same script as men's. We don't normally have like the break of the day. Often there's multiple breakaways. And as a commentator, I'm always looking, what's the World Tour representation in this breakaway? Like, where's the real firepower coming from? And also, that obviously is about where's the firepower coming from behind? You know, which World Tour teams in the peloton haven't got representation there? But every time a breakaway formed, I was like, well, it's entirely World Tour teams here and it's entirely World Tour teams behind. So we can't even talk about, you know, the smaller teams that really want to make this work, whereas often World Tour teams may be just sort of marking a move. So for me, that changed things quite a bit in terms of breakaways. And we saw over the first 2 days of racing, it was just solo breakaways that were allowed to get away on stage one and stage two. Stage three, there was a two-rider breakaway that was allowed to go clear. But clearly, there was just less people that were like, I really want to make this work. And the peloton obviously knew that anybody that attacks, they're all World Tour riders. So I think that did change things. I know there has been a lot of people quite vocal about this not being a good change for various reasons. I am going to sit myself firmly on the fence, possibly alongside Becca, because I like it. I'm comfortable there, and sort of delay giving my opinion on this change until we're a few more races in. I think that it's difficult with just the first World Tour race of the year, Tour Down Under. I mean, I would say for the Tour Down Under, it was a good thing that like SD Works were there. They're the team that have consistently been one of the highest ranked teams in the world for a few seasons now, and obviously having them missing from a race does change things. It was interesting they were only there with five riders, and I know Danny Stam has said he's not, you know, not keen on the rule changes, but I'm sort of going to just hold back opinion until we've had a few more races under our belt and see how it changes things going forwards.
Well, Becca, I'll bring you in because you're up there on the fence as well, so Joe can just pass the mic to you quite easily. But how do you think that might change things? I mean, like Joe says, you kind of have to wait and see, but it could be actually a positive thing in that there's a bit more chance of the breakaway staying away. Maybe teams will see it as a more viable way of winning a race. Whereas I feel like a lot of the time it seems like a fool's errand, and a lot of the time the World Tour teams are not very keen to get in there because you're kind of with a lot of inexperienced riders until you get an upset like our favourite Lotte Klaas en bloop.
Have you seen my jumper? By the
way. You're wearing your Lotte Klaas jumper.
Lotte Klaas.
I'm very proud of that. How do you think it might go? Or will we just get to a situation where there's just such an unwillingness to get in? No one wants to go in the breakaway, and then it becomes a bit like at the Tour Down Under, where we just had these kind of the odd solo break going. It didn't really grow. The breakaways didn't really grow in any momentum, did they?
Yeah, I think I sort of felt that, especially on stage three, where I was kind of like, oh yeah, things are still kind of going along together, when I actually, yeah, I completely agree with Joe. Like, you would have said that there would be people trying to really animate from the gun to get that opportunity. So I massively agree with that change in dynamic. I do still think the jury's out a little bit as to like getting further into the season. But I do think it will change that dynamic. But then I think it will evolve like as we go forward. So let's see what happens with that change. Yeah, I think there was definitely less people going right. And because in terms of interviewing the smaller teams over the years, you know that they are going to go from kilometre zero to try and do something, especially when they know they're going to get that TV coverage. So, yeah, that was a definite change. I think, as with the sport as a whole, we just want to continue to see the growth and the strength across the teams so that we avoid this problem where you get one big hitter injured and then you just don't have the depth of the team to back that up when you've got dual schedules and everybody's trying to field everything. So I think it's a change that has perhaps come a little early for where we are at, but I want to see the sport continue to bolster and grow in that respect. So yeah, I think it's a very early one to tell, but it undoubtedly changed that dynamic for me watching the Tour Down Under early on.
Yeah, it makes sort of sense on paper, doesn't it? Because you do want to see all of the, you want a bit more, there's so little cohesion in the cycling calendar. There are so many races going on of so many levels of all different, and it's almost like totally arbitrary how a race is seen in terms of its prestige and how much people want to win it and, you know, how big it is. It's so slightly kind of random, but it does make sense that you want to have all of these big players at all of the big races. But obviously, and I think, Denny, you'll probably have more of a perspective on it, it's obviously such a loss also for all these Conti teams. It does leave you kind of thinking, what is the real driver for these smaller teams now if the kind of World Tour is off limits? It's like, where is the, you know, we always talk about the big shop window, don't we? Where is the big shop window for these teams to get their sponsors out there now?
Yeah, I mean, you can see the logic, can't you? Because at the moment we do have different, although there are, you know, a large number of women's World Tour races, there's clearly a pecking order. And in the previous years, there are some races which teams just opt out of, you know, and the fields are relatively weak compared to some of the bigger Women's World Tour races. But I think, you know, it's the question of whether this is too early for this change to happen, because even within the Women's World Tour, the squads aren't huge. Teams will need to, can only opt out of one Women's World Tour race. So there will be the question of whether the field strength will really benefit overall anyway, because a lot of teams would be sending their B or C teams to some Work Women's World Tour races anyway. Will teams be able to manage? You know, will riders feel over kind of raced as we get towards the end of the season? But yeah, for UCI continental teams, I really feel their pain. Obviously, I talk to the British managers quite a lot of the British UCI continental teams. They feel that that a lot of the smaller races, the 0.2 races, are the calendar there is shrinking as it is, and now they're being told they can't participate. There is a way for them to participate in the Women's World Tour races, but it is very roundabout. So I think it depends on world wild cards and the World Tour teams opting, enough World Tour teams not opting to race those races. I won't go into the kind of the details, but there's an outside chance they can participate. But yeah, I interviewed the manager of Smurfit Westrock, one of the British teams, Rick Lister, the other day. And he is up in arms about the change because it means that he's very unlikely now to be able to ride the Tour of Britain women, which is a women's World Tour race. That is a huge shop window, not just for the riders, and not just an opportunity for them to show the world tour teams what they can do and maybe get a contract like Lauren Dixon has this year, but also for the teams themselves. You know, they rely on that TV time to draw in sponsorship, and it just makes the environment a lot more difficult for UCI continental teams at a time when we already know it's very, very tough for teams. You know, many teams can't afford to pay their riders. And it does feel like we're getting to a situation now where the top tier is professionalizing at an accelerated rate, which is really good. It's good, you know, it's good for the top end of the sport. But my concern is that the kind of lower tiers are being left behind, and the kind of the distance between that top tier and the lower tiers is getting larger, which is not good, because we do need that development tier. We do need lower tiers to help riders develop, and we need a space for that development that doesn't just involve riders having to jump up to the World Tour and get used to racing kind of straight away.
Yeah, I mean, we do have, of course, we had the news this week, didn't we, that probably the biggest shop window of them all, the Tour de France FAM, is going to be starting in the UK next year. Normally, if you were a British Conti team, that would be, the feeling would be like it would be, you know, what an ambition it would be to get a wild card to start there, as, you know, often the race will give a local team to the Grand Départ a ride. So it is a real shock and a shame, and it will be interesting to see how it kind of manifests through the racing as well, these kind of changing regulations. But let's talk about this Grand Départ next year. We're actually going to go, like they did on BBC News, we're going to go live to West Sussex to be joined by Rebecca Charlton. I hope everyone else caught this. The BBC spin was, of course, about hoping to, you know, for a rise in bike sales, wasn't it? It was the general spin. But yes, Rebecca, I mean, it's going to be a huge moment to have the Tour de France FAM in the UK, isn't it? As, you know, British journalists and former riders, and former rider, Joe. It's a huge moment.
I raced against Joe once, didn't we?
I mean, you
were probably many, many, many laps up.
Does Joe even...
Joe's erased it from their memory.
Yeah. It's so...
this is awkward,
so
isn't it? That was tumbleweed, wasn't it?
Joe
didn't even know I was there because she was so many laps ahead that...
I do remember racing with you, but I'm a bit more on the track. Or is that the laps we're referring to?
I mean, any scenario, there were lap gains involved by you,
I don't
of course.
About that.
I think you just went, you were the off from kilometre zero. Not that you needed the exposure, but yeah, you were just gone.
I just ate your dust. That was my motivation. I was attacking from kilometre zero.
But yes, to clarify, Rose, yes, and Ryder,
yes,
in Joe joining us on the pod today. So, yes, this is really, really exciting news. And yeah, I did a stint on BBC Wales as well, talking about where
did
the men's race
Welsh,
is going to go.
Course.
Obviously in Welsh, yes, yes. But actually, from the Torbrim women, I have practiced my Welsh a lot over the years.
I think so. I think I remember forwarding my friend's dad has this fantastic booming Welsh voice, and we just got him to record all the Welsh start and finish towns, and then I forwarded you those on voice memo.
This
I think
is
that's
the truth
kind of the kind
here.
Of thing
you
that
have
relying on.
Been my linguistic coaches over the years, haven't you? So, but
hopefully
anyway,
you can pronounce these ones, Becca. I hope.
Well, the women's race starts in Leeds, so we're okay. So, yeah, of course, this is the massive news for all of us and everybody involved that it is going to be coming to the UK. But what I love about this is the number of destinations that people are going to get out and watch this at. So I've just got the map here to remind myself. So we've got Leeds, Manchester, Sheffield, and then London, which is just brilliant, isn't it, that it's going to come to London. But, yeah, of course, this is not this year's race, but the next one. And I am absolutely buzzing, as you can tell. I've been talking about it a lot all week.
Yeah. Also, it's going to be the first time where we have the men's and women's Grand Départ are also going to be in the same country. So, you know, that's a positive in that we're kind of going to have these sort of wave, almost like a, they're not going to be obviously at the same time. So it's almost like we have these kind of waves of interest back in cycling, we would hope. But yeah, Denny, I mean, this from your, you know, you have a domestic eye, that makes you sound like you're just knocking up some vol-au-vents or something, doesn't
yeah,
it? But
I love a bit of baking, so it's fine.
Yeah, well, perfect. But yeah, this is, you know, it's a great moment for British cycling, you would hope.
Yeah, it is a big moment. It's always, you know, I'm sure there'll be millions of people at the roadside for both the men's and the women's races, and you know, British crowds have shown that they do come out in force when these big occasions happen. I think, you know, British cycling, John Dutton was talking about the legacy it's going to provide. I guess my with my skeptical hat on, I think history has shown that Tour de France, Grand Départs, obviously we haven't had one for the women's race yet in the UK, but they do tend to create a bubble. And certainly there's, we saw the creation of the Tour de Yorkshire and participation rates change and so on. But the bubble isn't that long lasting necessarily. You know, I think cycling levels are lower now than they were in 2014 when we last had a Grand Départ. The domestic road racing scene is not at the level it was then. So I think the question is, you know, can that legacy be sustained? But the racing itself looks really, really exciting. We haven't had the route details yet for any of the stages, unlike the men's race, but I understand the finish in Sheffield in stage two may be similar to the one that we had in Sheffield in 2014 for the men's race. And I think it will be across the peaks we could see some particularly steep climbs like Gwinnett's Pass and the Snake Pass and others. So could be in for some really, really exciting racing. And, you know, Yorkshire always puts on a great show. So I think, I know a lot of British riders will be targeting this as well. Robin Clay, who stepped up to the pro ranks for Team Picnic Postenel, lives very close to the start. So it will already be creating the kind of target that I guess the Olympic Games creates for home riders as well.
Yeah, well, that's all next year. We've got this year to get on with first, don't we? And it's coming thick and fast, isn't it? Because next time we meet, it will be the UAE tour will have happened, and then we'll be already looking ahead to the return of the European season and Omloop Het Nieuwsblad. So thank you very much for joining me. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Oliver. Thank you, Becca. And thank you, Denny. And of course, thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb and Lionel Burney.